if you're sitting in a technical role at the moment and you're feeling a bit stuck and you want to get to senior leadership, don't go stack more technical skills. No, focus on leadership. When you make that shift, if you're heading into an executive or a CEO role, your role is to inspire purpose. Your role is to communicate direction. Your role is to unblock barriers. And they struggle with things like delegation. They still want to be, I need to sign it off. I need to make sure it's...
Hello and welcome to the Brand My Career podcast. I'm your host, Alex Cutterford, and I'm so glad you're joining me today. My goal is to help you take ownership of your career, find your people through personal branding and networking, and take career-enhancing action. Managing your life and career can be hard. That's why every fortnight, I'll be releasing an episode where I interview a diverse range of guests that will help you find clarity and build confidence in your career. Let's get into it.
Well, welcome back to another episode of the Brand My Career podcast. And today I'm joined by Melanie Smith, who is a leadership and career coach. Thanks for joining me, Mel.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
So I'm really excited to jump in and be chatting with you today a bit about the work that you're doing now as a leadership and career coach. But I was keen to sort of kick it off with this, you sharing a bit about your career journey and what's brought you to what you're doing today.
Yep. Thank you. So, yeah, I started my career in people and culture. In fact, I spent almost two decades working in people and culture and kind of worked my way up through the ranks. I worked across a variety of industries from kind of health to media to property development, infrastructure management, big four consulting firms. I've kind of done lots of different things. And I was really fortunate within my career that I got to spend some time, I guess, specializing outside of the generalist people and culture function in change management. So I did a couple of change management gigs, one in Singapore for a global project when I was working for a big four consulting firm, and another one for a property development company as well. So whilst I am very much a generalist people and culture person, I have a strong bent, I guess, towards change management. But particularly in that change management space, it's really around leadership development and capability and helping leaders to take their teams on the journey in that space. Throughout my career, I've been super, super passionate about the development of people and seeing the growth and development of future leaders and watching people's careers develop as they've moved through. So I've been very people-focused, less kind of compliance-focused in my people and culture practice over the years.
Yeah, that's really good. It's probably good, right, to have someone that cares and focuses on people in a people and culture role.
You would really hope so. yeah, you would really hope so. I mean, people and culture, I think, as a function, gets a little bit of a tough reception at times in organisations. It can be, you know, sometimes you're the bearer of bad news. But yeah, if you're human centred and people centred, then you're definitely going to be more successful in that kind of function.
Yeah, it is interesting that point you make around how people perceive the role of HR and people and culture. And I presume it sort of comes down to each workplace would be different as to why it's perceived that way. And because I guess in my mind, I instantly go to, oh, these are people that really care about people and just want to make the workplace really safe for them, engaging, as good as it can be. But I guess the flip side of that is that you could view them as, oh, they're the ones that tell you you're fired, or they're the ones that are breaking the bad news or putting in things in place that you really don't appreciate. So it could be quite widely experienced.
Yeah. And there's also a commonly held belief that, you know, people and culture are just an extension of management. So I think it's a really tricky role to play in an organization, particularly when you are people focused, because you are really trying to be that conduit between the leaders of the organization and have a strong understanding of what's needed on the ground. So you're really trying to negotiate and find that balance between the two really effectively. But also you're really privileged to hold that position as well, because if you can sit in that human-centered kind of state, and you're able to hear and understand and be trusted by all people across the organization, it then gives you the ability to influence up the line as well. So I have seen less effective people and culture people who don't find that balance, but the ones who are really effective are the ones who really do know, like, you're almost like the moral compass to a certain degree for the organization.
Yeah. And you've sort of alluded to there. So you've worked in lots of different industries, but were they all within a HR sort of people culture function?
For me? Yeah, I have spent my career in people and culture, other than where I've dabbled in the change management, where I've picked up projects and been on secondments in the change management space. So I started out at Fairfax, actually, in publishing, back when newspapers were still a thing, and kind of grew my career from there. So I've been into senior and executive leadership before I started my organization as well. So I've walked the whole breadth of people and culture. Generally stayed in that generalist space, so I've had to leverage specialists across the people and culture function quite a lot, but I've mostly played in the generalist space.
It's just interesting for someone that's thinking about a career themselves in HR is that you're not boxed into one industry. It's sort of like an industry that crosses all industries, and you can have a really diverse career even within the one profession.
Yeah, which was one of the reasons why I chose it, to be honest. I definitely felt that the opportunity, like every organization that has scale pretty much globally has a people and culture function. So the opportunities to shift and move rather than changing careers, you could change industries, and there's still a lot to learn. There's still very big shifts depending on what industry you're working in, but it does give you this real opportunity for breadth across industries, which I really enjoyed. Having worked across so many diverse organizations, and you pick things up from different places, like, you know, in property development, they do this thing this way, and you can take that along to a big four professional services firm. It's quite new to them because they haven't been exposed to those types of tools or strategies before. So yeah, it's a nice way to think, instead of going deep technically, to think about the breadth you can get across industry is always really fun.
That's really great advice. What advice would you give to someone that, say, you're working in a HR, you've come into a HR role, and you're within an organization, and you've maybe got leadership that are looking to fulfill an organizational goal, and maybe you're seeing some ways that it needs to maybe be tweaked to ensure that it's prioritizing the people that will be outworking that. How would they be best advocating that within a leadership conversation?
So it's really around assessing your level of influence with the executives or the people who are the decision makers around that change piece, right? I think that we forget sometimes when we're in people and culture that we are actually often salespeople. We need to understand the agendas for the top of the tree and where those decision makers are. And then we need to understand how our ideas or opinions or solutions can be crafted, or a narrative created around it, so that you can create win-win outcomes for where the organization's trying to go with a particular decision and where you can see the opportunity. And I think, in fact, the more that you do that, the more value you're seen to add. I feel that people who don't seek out those opportunities and add those value pieces often miss the opportunity to be seen as a leader in people and culture. You really need to understand how a whole organization functions to be able to put those ideas on the table that will add value. So there's a bit of sales in there, to be honest, and there's the need to really harness your influencing skills and a bit of resilience. I once had a leader who I raised some opportunities to a few times. We were in an executive team, and I'll never forget, it was probably the third week in a row that I'd tried to position my idea in a different way, and he was like, Mel, I love your enthusiasm. We're probably not quite there yet, but but we will get there. So it's also being able to have that resilience to take that knot back and think about, okay, well, when will be the right time to reignite this idea or put it back on the table? Don't forget it and don't take that as a no. But yeah, there's a bit of resilience around understanding how much you can push and where you need to pull back and say, okay, I'm just going to sit and wait for that. Mm.
Hey, Alex here. Just wanted to reach out to everyone and say thank you so much for following along with the Brand My Career podcast. I'm really loving having the conversations that I'm having and bringing this content to people. I want to keep bringing more content to people. I want to bring stories of people's career journey. And one of the ways that I can be doing that is by getting your support. And one of the ways you can do that is by shouting me a coffee. On my website, you can find the link to shout me a coffee to help me keep bringing more content, building what I already have done and improving it, getting better, getting more and more people on and sharing their career stories and the lessons that they've learned along the way. So thank you for following along, and would you consider getting on board and helping me take it to new heights? Yeah, absolutely. And like, as you were saying, it's like, that's just good career building advice in and of itself. That ability to create win-wins, I've found, is because you're showing like there's intent and you're trying to make the organization better, and you're also trying to get wins for the people and make it like, let's get the win in a way that everyone's actually enjoyed getting the win. So yeah, anytime you can create a win-win scenario and showing your bosses like that you're really engaged in this process and want it to be as best as possible, but you do it in a way that's actually still getting them the win, I think is just a great way to build your career, really.
Yeah, and showing them that you understand the objective. So you're not coming in talking about things that are not going to help them. Like, yeah, that's a nice to have, but how does that actually help us get to where we've got to go? So when you can kind of knit it together and say, you know, you could get to here, or you could accelerate it and get to here if we did it slightly differently. So you need to have, and I think that's the influence in the sell piece, is understanding the different perspectives of the stakeholders that you're trying to influence and being able to get things across the line that way.
That's really solid advice. So that brings us to what you're doing now. So would you like to share a bit about what you do with your business now?
Yeah, so as I said at the beginning of the session, I am really passionate about helping people develop. In fact, throughout my career, I've got my satisfaction from seeing people that I've worked with really thrive and feeling like maybe I've just had a little bit of something to do with their ability to kind of progress their careers. So I spent a long time, probably the last 10 years of my career, really passionately thinking about coaching as a function of helping people to develop in their careers, helping them to get insight into the strengths that they have and how they can leverage them and the things that have held them back, and what's getting in the way. How do I actually mitigate those barriers? And an opportunity came up for me at the beginning of the year to take a bit of a leap of faith with myself, to be honest, around kicking off my own coaching business. So I did that. And essentially what I focus on is people who are in kind of that mid-level of their career where, you know, you're a technical expert or you're a functional expert and you're kind of top of your game there, but maybe feeling a little bit stuck with trying to get through to senior leadership. And I focus in on these people because I've worked with them so much throughout my career. I've seen people who get to that level and they're not quite understanding why they're not getting that next opportunity up the line. So I have developed a coaching program, where I work with people specifically around identifying their strengths and looking at the shift in mindset that they need to create for themselves to be successful in achieving that next level, but also getting into that next level of leadership and being sustainable in that level. And the reason I talk about sustainability, I think it's a very, very important thing that a lot of leaders don't think about when they make that career or that step change. a technical leader and operating in that space where we're really comfortable is it's a different gig to operating at a senior leadership level. And I see people who make those shifts and struggle, right? Because they're kind of trying to do what they've always done as a leader in a functional space. And then they get to this next level and they're being asked to contribute to the blue sky thinking of the organization, to engage with leaders across the different functions that exist, and to really think about how they're operating as part of that senior team, not the down the line team. And what you see a lot is people struggle to delegate. They tend to micromanage because they're not quite sure how to make that shift into that next level. So they stay where they're comfortable, and they essentially stack leadership in their functions. And there's lots of other examples, but it's really easy to mitigate these barriers and challenges. People just need a bit of support, a bit of insight, and they need to work out how to leverage their strengths. So I focus in on that particular kind of cohort. Because I have worked across industries, I do work with people across industries. I find that really interesting and fascinating. And I feel really privileged to be able to help people to create those insights and make those shifts for themselves.
Yeah, it's a really great space to work in. It has me thinking, so say there's someone there, a manager of a department within an organization, what would be some of the key mindset shifts for them to make to go from managing a department to being a CEO of an organization?
Firstly, you have to get out of your own way and let people manage their technical functions. So a lot of people who are sitting in that kind of departmental space and they're responsible for a particular function or technical area, they can't help but dabble. They can't help themselves, right? They're like, this is the stuff I know. It's easy for me. I'm really passionate about it. So they get a bit stuck. Another challenge that I see is where, or advice I would give is set the direction and enable people to do their jobs. So be very clear on what the expectations are, but you don't need to be in the detail every single day. In fact, you need to be up here thinking about the direction of the organization and where it's going rather than down in the weeds of every single function. And it's not physically possible to be across it all, so you're going to burn yourself out. And I think the other thing is when you make that shift, if you're heading into an executive or a CEO role, your role is to inspire purpose. Your role is to communicate direction. Your role is to unblock barriers. Your role is to strategically lead. And if you're sitting in a CEO position and you're very concerned about the operations of the business, like you need to be across it. But that it's not your job to do that doing anymore. So making sure that there's this clear kind of roadmap for people that they understand what it is that they're contributing to, those are the really big pieces. I think the other piece is I read some research recently where it talked about the more senior people get in an organization, the less vulnerability they display, and the impact that that has on people being able to connect to their message or connect to their vision. So thinking about authenticity as a leader and thinking about how you can display that, thinking about the fact that just because you're the CEO doesn't mean you need to be perfect, doesn't mean you need to have all of the answers. And in fact, if you talk to people about not having all of the answers, you'll get all of these great ideas that bubble up from underneath. So creating those communication channels for people from the front line all the way through to be able to connect with you, whether it be face-to-face or through Q&A sessions or whatever else, but demonstrating that vulnerability and asking the questions of your people, getting that group collective thinking going, I think is really important as well.
Yeah, and it takes a lot of self-confidence, doesn't it, to open up that space to even this, like giving a platform that people can communicate with you takes a level of vulnerability because you don't know what's going to come out of that, and then there's going to be a responsibility of how you handle it. A lot of confidence, which sort of comes into then what you've talked about within the mindset space is self-limiting beliefs that that people have, and working through some of those, that like imposter syndrome is one that comes up regularly, that I'm sure that's probably one of the things that stops people from stepping into those roles. But then also when they get the job, they're sort of left with this feeling of, do I even belong here? And that could cause someone to go into their shell and withhold that vulnerability. How do people work through these self-limiting beliefs to be the leader that they are capable of being?
I think one really easy tip is to seek out the evidence that supports your perspective of yourself, or the evidence that doesn't support it, right? So go looking for evidence. And I've had this conversation with many people. I've had to do this work myself where, you know, I've sat in, I was head of people and culture for a particular organization, and I kind of came into the role and I was like, oh, am I actually capable of this? All of a sudden there's no structure above me. I've got to build all the structure below me. Like, it felt like a lot was sitting on my shoulders, and I was like, can I actually do this? And when I went off and started to look for evidence around, could I do this, or, you know, do I actually deserve to be here? I think most people, when they go through that exercise, overwhelmingly you find that it's not the case. You go and you ask some people that you trust, that you've worked with before, about their experience of you, and you start to dispel this myth that you're telling yourself, right? So I think that when we're talking about imposter syndrome and we're talking about self-limiting beliefs, you know, it's a narrative that we're creating for ourselves. And it'll come from whatever experience we've had in our life. Like, there'll be different reasons for why people feel that particular way. But when you can bring it back to, it's just a story that I'm telling myself, what is the alternative story that I can create? What is it in my story that isn't working for me anymore? And how can I actually shift that so that I have more helpful beliefs about myself that are based on evidence that I've actually tangibly received, that I can put my hands on and actually look at in detail? So self-limiting beliefs is one of those things. It's like, it is just a belief. And when you recognize that, you know, it is manufactured and created by me, or I've pulled that story in, I can actually change. I have power to change that. And it's really, it is really quite a powerful process to go through that kind of inner conversation and self-talk.
Yeah, learning how to manage yourself, right? Like, you're managing your emotions. And this is, I think that's one of the big keys to career progression, is the people that develop that ability to manage themselves is what allows you to have the ability to manage and lead others, right? Because you now need to be able to stay in a position where it's not just you managing yourself. It's also then about understanding now to look out at the people in front of you. So the more you learn to manage yourself, probably that in and of itself helps you become a better leader, because you learn the techniques to pass on to others.
And then you can see things in other people as well. You start to recognize patterns in other people, and then if you're brave enough, you can start to talk about your own story with those people, and that then creates a psychologically safe environment for people to share where they're at, and to kind of work through those narratives with their leader. So I think that's really powerful as well. Definitely helps leaders be more human-centered.
You talk about doing this in a sustainable way, and in and I think it might have been when we caught up the other week, or chatting about what got you here won't get you there.
Yeah.
Would you be able to share more on that?
Yeah, so it kind of carries on a little bit from what we were just talking about with regards to people holding on to the way that they've the tools that they've used to get them to where they are in their career, and getting to a point where, you know, being the person who's in the detail, who understands all of the technical aspects of something, who is able to lead technical leaders because they're across every part of the process that needs to be done, or whatever it might be. It is fundamentally a mindset shift when you need to shift gears into senior leadership. And that kind of horizon, strategic horizon view that you need to be able to take as a senior leader. When you're more junior in your career, it's okay to just look at the tasks and the tactical stuff that needs to be done, and then you progress into like more of an operational kind of sphere. But you get to this third horizon where you need to be able to look past what is in the now and be able to forecast what's coming and look at opportunities and how to harness them and that kind of piece. And you can no longer just sit comfortably in this technical space. You need to be leveraging your peers from across technical areas. You need to be not seeing your technical function as the most important function in the organization anymore, because it's just contributing. It's part of almost like a spoke in a wheel, right? There's all these other pieces that need to fit together, and no one of them is more important than the other. So you need to shed some of that technical focus, not discount it, but you need to shed some of that focus to be able to really deliver at that next level up. I also see a lot of people who make those shifts and they struggle with things like delegation. They still want to be, I need to sign it off. I need to make sure it's perfect. I need to, you know, it's my reputation on the line. But you kind of squash the people below you when you take that approach, because you're not giving them the space to actually grow and develop and, you know, improve their own leadership as well. So, yeah, I'm not sure if I've quite answered the question, but essentially it's the transition and being aware of where those pitfalls are in that transition are really critical to moving forward, because it is actually a different job. It's not the same job with a bigger team or a higher level of technical expertise across a broader team. It is fundamentally a different role. And understanding the difference means you can plan for it, you can develop for it, you can take opportunities that will give you exposure to what that different job looks like. And that's how you kind of get unstuck, in my view.
Yeah. Like, as you're talking, and I sort of form a picture in my mind of it, it's sort of like when you think of someone in like a technical role within an organization, whatever it might be that they do, you sort of learn how to master getting done what you want to get done within the system that you're operating in.
Yes.
Whereas as you step up into that higher level, you're now looking at those systems and saying, well, does something about that system need to fundamentally change that changes that dynamic, rather than just mastering what is in existence? You're sort of starting that when you talk about like that blue sky thinking, it's sort of like, well, what are the things that we can make a change to a system that creates a whole different environment that people can then operate better within?
Yeah. I mean, and if I take it from a people and culture example, because that's what I know best, you know, I've led people and culture functions, but when you get to that executive level, you actually need to have an understanding of how finance works and how, you know, the different technical functions in the organization work and what roles they all play and how they all come together and what their contribution currently looks like, should look like, needs to look like in the future. So that you are looking at it as a whole system and you can make the shifts as a system, understanding that if you move one thing in one part, it's going to impact on all these other parts, right? So you're part of that review of how it all fits together rather than just looking at how I contribute up. You're now going, well, how do all of these other parts contribute as well? And you're looking at it as a whole, I guess, which can be quite different depending on where you are. And you see the finance people who understand not just the numbers of the organization. Like, I've seen such successful CFOs who they understand the whole life cycle and every single function in the organization, every executive in the organization needs to understand the life cycle, because if you're stuck just in the numbers or if you're stuck just in the people, then your decision making is going to be missing all of these other data pieces. And in fact, those executive teams who do have those kind of downward looking focus points, they tend to be less productive. They tend to be or to find themselves in more conflict because they're advocating for their own patch rather than understanding how their patch is contributing more broadly across the success of the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. I reckon the HR and the accounting picture is probably a great example of, like, it's such a stark example. Like, if you only care about the money and saving as much money as you can, then it's like it just doesn't work. And the same as, like, all I care about is the people and don't care what it costs, and, you know, it just doesn't work, you know, like, it doesn't get you to even your goal, let alone everyone else's.
Yeah.
But that ability, like, and particularly, like, the finance, like, if you get someone with their, that have their hands on the money but also fundamentally understand the big picture of the goal and how that system works, then it's amazing what they can unlock for it that sort of, from an accounting perspective, could completely end up changing the delivery on the ground of a service. Maybe they find a way that can make it less complicated or something for the person on the ground to do their job than they needed to do, but we're still getting all the information that's needed or something. Like, it can be really powerful.
And when you come back to thinking around that kind of ability to sell or that ability to influence, right, when you're getting to those really senior levels, if you don't have an understanding of the different components of the organization and what their agendas are and how they actually collectively function together, then you will struggle to get the dollars because you won't be able to communicate the ROI of particular, you know, activities that require budget. You know, you don't have the commercial nous to sit at the table and to speak to somebody who's in a sales function around why you think that they need to do something slightly differently. So you've got to have some skin in the game across all of those pieces. It's not enough to sit in your technical function. You will actually not have the influence because people will feel like you don't understand them. You don't understand the impact of what you're saying, and they won't put budget or money behind your ideas or initiatives if you're to draw like quite a blunt kind of line across it. You just cannot be as effective.
Mm. And when you think about from the perspective of career building, the act of reaching out to people that you're working alongside, understanding what they do, learning from them, you're building those relationships, right? You're building your own skill sets as well as networks within the organization, or maybe it's even external to the organization, that's building a network of people that know you, and then they start to see, oh, this person's pretty switched on and they're learning, and then you're sharing insights with them, and that all just within and of itself starts to create those opportunities to progress and gain opportunities.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And it doesn't take much, just showing a little bit of interest. To learn and being open to other people's ideas is generally enough for people to invite you in to give you more. Mm.
Yeah, yeah. So would there be any final advice that you would give to someone that's maybe in the position right now of they're in mid-level leadership, maybe they feel like they've stagnated, they want to get to that next level and they're not sure what next step to take? What would be your advice?
So there's a few things in that, and maybe this is cheeky, but I would encourage people to get some coaching, to be really honest, because sometimes the things that we don't see in ourselves are the things that are holding us back. And whether that be that we're overplaying our strengths or underplaying our strengths, or whether it's, you know, we're turning up in a particular environment and we're not really aware of our impact in those environments, like, coaching can help to uncover those types of barriers. But some really practical things that people can do internally in their organizations is, firstly, seek sponsorship. So find someone in the organization who's going to advocate for you, who will help to open some of those doors to some of those opportunities, whether it's across laterally across the organization so you get more breadth, or opportunities to kind of move up through the organization. The second thing I would say is seek feedback often from people who are diverse, right? So don't just stick to people within your function and say, oh, I'm going to get feedback from this same person again who always tells me how amazing I am and how I'm the best thing since sliced bread. Go find some people that you've worked with and you honestly don't know where you're at with them, and get some constructive feedback and be open to it. listen to it. Someone's perspective is their reality. You take it and thank them and then work out what you need to do with it from there. And I think that the third thing is talk to people about what you're wanting to do. So many people I know who sit back and kind of go, oh, I really want this job. It's like, well, have you talked to anybody about your interests? And they're like, well, no, what if they say no? Take the risk. You don't ask, you don't get. And the last thing I would say is, if you're sitting in a technical role at the moment and you're feeling a bit stuck and you want to get to senior leadership, don't go stack more technical skills. The number of conversations I have with people around, I'm just going to go off and get this project management skill set, or I'm going to go off and get this other qualification over here, and once I've done that, I'll be ready. No, focus on leadership. Demonstrate your potential to lead, because that's what they're looking for at that senior level. You need to be able to be flexible enough to work across functions and with people from outside of your own functional area. But if you don't demonstrate that ability to actually step up into that space, if you're not demonstrating to people that you have potential for leadership, then you're going to be keeping that ceiling sitting very firmly above your head. So just a few practical things there.
That's some really good advice. Thanks so much, Mel. How could people find you if they want to get in touch?
Yeah, so I have a website, which is metanoiaconsulting.com.au. There's some information there about some of the coaching programs that I do. Or you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm Melanie Smith, so there's a few of us, but you'll see me listed there with Metanoia Consulting. And, yeah, reach out, DM me, happy to have a conversation, happy to kind of strategize with people, work out what some of those barriers might be. So, yeah.
Thanks for being on today, Mel. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Alex. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for joining me today. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And let's connect on LinkedIn so that we can keep the conversation going. Or head to my website and download my free resource, The Career Building Principles. Bye for now.